Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of these organizational deep dives. Today we are diving deep into the state of the farm system and the organization for the Colorado Rockies. Jeff is our Rockies top 30 writer, top 40, because we'll have top 40 prospects on the site before too long. But we're just diving straight in on an organization that, if you're a Rockies fan, we do offer some condolences. It's been a rocky decade, I would say, for much of the decade. You are in a division that sometimes probably feels impossible. You have the Goliath of all Goliaths in the Los Angeles Dodgers. You also have in the division San Francisco Giants, which I know it's been a while, but is a big market team. A sleeping giant that won 3 World Series in a 6-year span, not in the 21st century. And by the way, also has posted one of the best seasons as far as regular season wins that we've seen in the 21st century in another season. Mm-hmm. Then we got the Padres, who have kind of punched above their weight a little bit, I would say, but have been a consistent playoff contender in recent years. And oh yeah, by the way, we have the D-backs who were in the World Series a couple of years ago. So the challenge is daunting. But Jeff, obviously the Rockies haven't really come close to matching that challenge in recent years. Is there any reason to hope that that's going to change anytime soon?
It's a really tough question, because you are against those Goliaths, as you said. And I think, having to deal with the other teams, but certainly the Dodgers on a consistent basis and all that they can do with their resources and just the glut of talent that they have, not only on their major league roster, but throughout their system, they're just constantly able to improve. Now, if you look at the last few years, this has been these two seasons were the lowest point in Rockies history the last 2 years. It's the first time that they have lost 100 or more games. They lost 103 last year. They lost 101 this year. There is a young core kind of developing at the major league roster that I think you could probably take some solace in. There is more pitching, I think, in this system than there's been for quite a while, at least since, Gray and I think Hoffman and some others were prospects for the Rockies. So it's been some time. But the question is, and I think remains, is, being a Rockies pitching prospect, it carries with it a much more difficult landing spot than anywhere else in the major leagues, even if it's Cincinnati for that matter. I just think there's so much working against you in Colorado in terms of how balls move and et cetera. It's not just, if you give up a fly ball that might, be an out, an F9 in some parks and is, a home run in Cincinnati, that's a little bit different. You have so many different elements in terms of your stuff doesn't play the same way at that elevation outside that it does elsewhere. And I think for pitchers, that's a big question and something they're going to have to get over. And we'll see if this core and this group that's coming up can potentially do that or not.
So I don't want to give a complete pass here though, because at the same time, you mentioned the Dodgers, we can mention the Padres, we could mention the Diamondbacks. Yes, they have some advantages that are just like the Dodgers have many advantages over the Rockies. But the thing that also does stand out that is something that the Rockies have to get better at is that it's hard to point to anything that the Rockies do better than the Dodgers. And I get it. Some of that, like, they're not going to be better at free agency than the Dodgers. They can't. They're not going to be allowed to spend them. But the Rockies pick higher than the Dodgers every single year without fail. Yeah. Every single year they pick higher. And the Dodgers, as a general rule, draft better and develop better than the Rockies.
The international market is probably the only place where I'd say, just from a talent identification standpoint, I think they might be pretty close to the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers maybe don't have as much bonus pool money, et cetera, but like the Rockies do a phenomenal job on the international market. They do deserve credit for that. They find a lot of good talent and they do get it along through the system and into the major league. So I do think that they deserve some credit for that. But outside of that, certainly drafting has not been a strong suit. Development has not been a strong suit, particularly on the pitching side.
Which obviously there are some challenges there that you, when you say like, they also have an altitude problem that understandably is something that their pitchers have to deal with. I agree with this idea that they have some challenging offensive environments in the minors as well, but that makes sense. Like you would not want to say, hey, we're playing in the FSL and then we're going to promote them up to, you know, the Midwest League. And then we're going to go to the lowest offensive environments we can find in, you know, in Double A. And then we want to go to a tomb in the International League. And then you go to Rock Course, you know, Coors Field. That'd be stupid to do that. So that makes sense. And that's kind of leading to my second question, which is, as much as we just pointed that out, like, okay, there are not a lot of things that they're doing. And I'd say international, I agree with you. That's the one that does kind of jump out. Mm-hmm. I do look at, though, what the Rockies farm system has produced year over year. And it doesn't feel like that's been their biggest problem. You know, they've produced an Ezekiel Tovar, a Brenton Doyle, Nolan Jones was a nice pickup. You go back a couple years before that, and there's Ryan McMahon, and there's Brendan Rodgers, and then there was Trevor Story, and Nolan Arenado. Like, again, and I know that's spanning a number of years, but I do feel like if the rest of the Rockies operation was running at the same level as its farm system was, its scouting and player development, they'd be in a better place than they are. Because a lot of this is, when I look at it and say, like, if you're producing a player or two who are average to, in some cases, well above average players year after year, you'd love to have a little bit more than that, but that's not a crazy amount that you're producing. The problem they've had is, Trevor Story was a 7-WAR player, but then I would say part of the problem with that is, and then they kept holding on to him. Yeah, they never cashed out. They're like, we'll just let him leave in free agency. Nolan Arenado was a great player for them. And by the time they cashed out, they sold him at pennies on the dollar. Like they haven't ever pulled a whole team together where everyone's peaking at the same time. But even when they have these kind of peak talent type stars, they never really seem to turn that into anything either.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things. I think it was certainly mismanagement of the major league roster is clear with this organization. They haven't moved out the assets that they could have moved out for, you know, the return assets that they could have potentially gotten. No, I'm being kind of vague here, but I think you do look at Nolan Arenado and it's like, after you decided to sign that contract, at worst, you should have stuck with it for a few more years and then tried to move him. You also have one advantage with a player like that where his offense is probably, now there's, you know, expected stats and stuff that teams are going to use, but you might be able to boost that player's value a little bit just by keeping him in Coors for a couple more years, paying down that salary, et cetera. They committed the money to it, and then how shortly thereafter did they move Arenado? It was really unusual because then you attach that price tag to it and it makes it just way less attractive. You've brought up some other players. I also think that if we look at the recent drafts, haven't been as bad. I think Dolander was a great pick. I think we both agree on that. We'll talk about that. We'll get into Charlie Condon probably at some point. But when you look at this run of Forrest Wall, Brendan Rodgers, Mike Nikorak, Tyler Nevin, Riley Pint, Robert Tyler, Ryan Rolison, between, you know, 14.
That's a lot of misses for a team picking at the top of the draft.
In the first round. And then Toglia kind of saved him a little bit last year with a big breakout. Veen has really slid back over the last couple of years and hasn't been able to stay on the field. Benny Montgomery, rinse and repeat of what I just said about Zach Veen. And, you know, we'll see with Gabriel Hughes. And then I even think with a pick like Sterling Thompson, he's off to 30. Like, nobody's, like, at this point, Thompson is, like, almost considered a non-prospect.
So, again, I don't want to make it like, oh, the drafting in the farm system has been perfect or anything like that. But I do look at it and say, the other thing that you just hit on with Verinato, there has been a little bit of, are we going for it? Are we pulling the foot off the gas? Are we going for it, putting our foot off the gas? Obviously, the Chris Bryant signing has worked out terribly for the Rockies, has worked out terribly for Bryant. You know, it's been rough. But to your kind of point, like, okay, that's a signing you do when you feel like that you're entering a window.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's not a sign you do just in isolation where you're like, hey, we've added a good player, a really good player. Here he is. The rest of the team, not there yet. Again, you add that when you're like, think that you're, exactly. And I'm not against teams adding good players, but you add that a big signing like that is supposed to, it can be a year or 2 years even before you think you're at your peak, but you're signing that guy usually because it's like, we have this crest coming and this is all going to come together. Like, that's where I think there's rightfully been some criticism of the Orioles. It's like, when are the Orioles going to do that to just say, hey, in addition to all this young talent, now we've added this great star veteran as well on a long-term deal to kind of help lead you along.
Exactly. Well, and I feel like, you know, it was always going to be a bad deal from a value perspective. But as you said, I think with a certain team that maybe had young stars and was, you know, kind of where the Cubs were, we'll say in like 2014, 2015, where they're like right on the edge, you have this core coming up. You know that your team maybe overproduced the year before. So kind of like what the Orioles were in 23 and then going into 24. I think that's the time you add a Bryant type, because it's like, well, I can at least sell that this guy has championship pedigree. He's been through those battles. He's won a title. He's, you know, can be a vocal leader in the clubhouse or whatever. I don't know that about Bryant in particular, but let's say that's the case. And he's won an MVP and, you know, our young star superstar. It will be good to have Bryant around because they would have had common feelings and common situations, et cetera, that, you know, that kind of thing. I could sell that. I don't think we could ever sell Bryant there. And they've had a history of kind of overpaying for free agents and then it not really working out. I mean, even going back, I can remember Ian Desmond getting a bunch of money from them and then, you know, never really was a productive player.
But okay. The point I'll make on this is to kind of go with that is so in 2019, the Rockies win 71 games. In 2020, COVID shortened season, but 26 and 34. In 2021, 74 and 87. That's when they signed Bryant. Yes. So now you could argue 71, 74. Hey, you know, okay. And let's just say that you signed Bryant and Bryant gave you a peak, like peak Bryant. Let's say that he was worth, I don't know, 5 wins over who he's replacing. That would be a great debut. So that would have gotten them to 79. Instead, they went to 68 wins the next year, you know, and then they obviously went to 59 the year after that. So the point being is like, sometimes it doesn't seem like that there has not been as much of a cohesive, like, this is what it's aimed at. This is the goal. That's before we kind of move on to talking about more of some of the individual prospects. You talked about this there's a young kind of core coming up here. I would say, like, let's just put an optimistic spin on it. Let's say that this really works out. That's a core that you're hoping will all kind of come together for what, 27?
I'd say like 26 is maybe realistic when you consider like Doyle, if he continues to improve a little bit, Tovar continues to improve. You get another year of Toglia, maybe Jones bounces back a little bit. And then you start to look at like, all right, like I think at that point, Amador is going to be ready. Cole Carrig is going to be ready. We'll see where Charlie Condon is. It's a chance that, you know, maybe he bounces back this year. We don't know. And then, you know, they have the pitching that I think is a lot of it is going to be ready this year. Whether it's Palmquist, you know, whether it's Dolan or maybe even Hughes gets some big league starts. He wasn't double A and, you know, pitched in the AFL. And despite the bad production, I will say teammates and scouts had higher opinions of Gabriel Hughes than I had anticipated when I went into the ranking process. And then they have like a glut of really talented pitchers in the complex levels. Like they're pretty loaded with, you know, there were about seven or eight of these guys that were kind of interesting.
I'm pouring cold water on this. Like sure. When you say 26, if what you just laid out, let's just say that this youth talent infusion is a 15 win improvement in 2025, right? That would get them to that 75, 76 win range. And that would be like, you really hit. And then they would need another wave of that to get you another 10 wins to get you into playoff contention.
There might be four or five wins just based on luck too. Like just with how
I'm not saying there's not some variance, but I'm saying when you're at 61, when you're at 61 wins, you're going to need a lot of improvement to get to playoff contention. I don't think it's a 2-year deal for them. I think it's like, if everything works right, we're talking 3 years.
Yeah. From. I don't think we're talking about like a 500 team, but when it starts to maybe take shape and starts to maybe gain some momentum, I don't think 26 is crazy. Maybe it's in the second half, but this isn't a team I think is going to win like 85 games in 26, but you know, maybe they're closer to 500.
Okay. And so we're now in the rational. Like I follow that. Like you're not saying they're in contention in 26.
Yeah.
You just think that they'll be respectable maybe again by as soon as 26.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it won't be like, you know, every single night the bettors are just betting the over on, you know, runs for opposing teams to the Rockies or whatever. I'm not a betting guy, so I'm kind of like
And what I would say also with that is, and we're saying that's the best case scenario. The best case, we're not saying this is what's going to happen.
That's like we're Charlie saying, Cotton, yeah. And Nolander, all these guys are like what, like the 90th percentile outcome in year two.
And that just lays out the extent of the challenge here, is I guess is what we're saying, is that we're saying in a everything works as good as you could hopefully work it, it leads to they could be a 500 team in a couple of years. That's the extent of the challenge that they face here. So, okay, we're going to make this a little bit more rosier because now we're going to really start diving in on some of these prospects, which talking about Chase Dolander can get pretty exciting. So we're going to talk about Chase Dolander and whether he can escape the Coors jinx right after this quick message. When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So, Jeff, Chase Dollander is one of the best pitching prospects in Rockies history. That is not a bold claim.
No.
Jeff Francis, Chase Dollander. I could probably come up with a couple more if I really work on it.
John Gray, I guess Alex.
John Gray, yep.
Freeland and Herman
Kyle
Marquez.
Kyle Freeland,
and Herman Marquez.
These are the names. But, okay. So
Ubaldo Jimenez, Ubaldo.
Ubaldo was really good again, but Ubaldo, a lot of these guys had flaws. Like Kyle Freeland was not ever as good a I know he had a really good year. He was never as good a prospect as Chase Dollander is.
No.
Ubaldo Jimenez always was so long in the back that there was always concerns about, is his control going to waver enough for him to be a front of the rotation? Herman Marquez ended up being a really good pitcher. I would say that he was never, as a prospect, considered Chase Dollander level. John Gray is a good one because he was obviously one of the top picks in the draft. But even in Gray's case, pretty quickly, there was a little bit of up and downness to him that happened pretty quickly. Jeff Francis is the one I bring up because he was our minor league player of the year.
Yeah.
And had some good seasons, but like maybe him. But I would say Dollander might be the best pitching prospect at the, you know, contemporary time, not what they ended up being, but like as a, he's considered right now, we view him as one of the best pitching prospects of all in baseball. But I will ask it this way. We know he's headed to Coors Field. Is there a reason to think that Dollander, not that he's going to post a sub-2 ERA or anything like that, it's Coors Field, but is there a reason to think that Chase Dollander has the stuff to survive and be a very effective pitcher, even with the challenges that come from pitching at his home park?
Yeah, and I think some of it might be possible because, you know, he doesn't sort of live off of breaking balls. He throws three different, you know, or a couple different shapes. You know, it's kind of a cut slider, but it's not huge dramatic movement. The curveball was a downer curveball. He kind of mixes it in here and there. You know, it's a pitch that he uses quite a bit. A lot of the times against lefties, kind of uses the outer part of the plate. So, I think that that's probably a little bit of less of an issue than if it was a guy that was, you know, primarily breaking balls. He has this four-seam fastball that gets above average ride for his release point because it's a really low release point. He's super high spin efficiency, which allows him with his release point and that spin efficiency to have a really flat vertical approach angle. It's one of the lower vertical approach angles. I think it's actually the lowest on the top 100, but it's one of the lowest in the minor leagues, particularly above pitchers that throw above 93 miles an hour. He sat 95 to 97 throughout the year, hit 100 miles per hour. And this is as a starter. He averaged that 96.3 is the exact number. On nearly 1,300 fastballs. He uses the fastball a lot. I think that that could maybe be a bit of a question, but maybe at Coors, that's less of an issue because of the quality of the pitch and the fact that maybe because of his release traits and that spin efficiency, it's maybe a little bit less impacted by the elevation at Coors. So I think there's some stuff that you could see in terms of talent and raw stuff. I think this is the best Rockies pitching prospect that at least I've seen in 10 years of covering the Rockies and writing them up. I think this is definitely the best guy. And I don't think it's really even that close. As you mentioned with Gray, there were some warts. I never covered Francis as a minor leaguer, so I can't speak.
You gotta be old like me to do that.
I can't speak to that with any certainty. But I do think this guy kind of passes the smell test. And if you look at Herman Marquez, he did have some success in Coors. And I think just the talent level and the level of stuff, he's going to be able to do that. And then when he's not at Coors, you know, the old fantasy baseball trait, they would sit your Rockies pitchers at home and then play them on the road. And I think that's kind of where he is.
The other question I would ask with that is okay, so now let's take Coors out of it for a minute. If he wasn't a Rockies pitching prospect, and I'm saying almost take your pick of wherever else. He's a Kansas City Royals prospect. He's a Minnesota Twins. He's a St. Louis Cardinals. If you took the Coors Field component out of this, and again, I'm just saying your average run-of-the-mill park, then how much better of a pitching prospect would he be? Like, if you were saying he's just going to get to pitch in a normal environment than what is Chase Donaldson, how much different does he look?
I think how he's viewed publicly is probably a little different. It's tough because when we do this, we're trying to evaluate the player and the talent, right? And on a player and talent standpoint, you know, I think he's right where, you know, regardless of where he was, I don't know if he overtakes, you know, Roki Sasaki, but it might be a more interesting conversation between him and maybe Jackson Jobe, a more interesting conversation between him and like a Bubba Chandler. I think those are guys that maybe he moves above if he's in Tampa Bay, if he's in Kansas City, like you said, which, you know, is a good park to pitch in. Or even just something that's kind of neutral. He's with the Blue Jays or the Red Sox. I feel like we wouldn't feel the same way. Even if he had to face those AL East teams, we wouldn't have sort of the same trepidation that we have with any Rocky starter. And I mean, I understand it.
And I'd say with that, like, it does to some small extent factor into our rankings, not because we're trying to penalize Rocky's pitchers and we hate them and we hate anyone who has to pitch at altitude, but just because it does have a chance. We've seen this time and time again. It's hard to sustain success year after year if you're pitching at that altitude. You may have, obviously each pitcher is unique, but when we talk about a guy like a Kyle Freeland at his best was really good, really had trouble sustaining it. Germán Márquez is kind of like the, I would say the gold standard of this, but it really is hard to find Rockies pitchers who do it year after year after year. Obviously, Chase Donaldson could be traded tomorrow, or he could pitch for the next 7 years at Coors Field, next 15 years, maybe signs an extension or whatever. But it does factor into, we're both trying to take a snapshot of where these, how these players are evaluated now, but we also are trying to project what they're going to do. And we're doing that in a league normalized context. We're not doing that in a, oh, he had a 4.5 ERA at Coors, and this guy had a 2.2 at 1966 Dodger Stadium. Clearly, he's so much worse. We're normalizing it and all, but that does make you worse in the other games too, because it takes a lot out of you, because your pitch mix doesn't work the same. All of these things. So that's why I wanted to ask it that way as well. This is an organization with a big one too, because they did draft Charlie Condon, who was our college player of the year, 2024, monster season at Georgia. However, Condon then went out to pro ball, got to play pretty extensively for a debut season.
Yeah.
The question I would ask is, I mean, it was rough. It was rocky. I'm not trying to make a pun there. I apologize on that.
You've done it twice,
but it was, it really was. That was bad. I
did it in the opening too.
Oh, I don't even meaning to.
I know. I realize
what I would say. But what I would say is that there were, like, when we talked to scouts who saw Charlie Condon as a pro, those reports did not match what we, when we talked to scouts, when we talked to analysts, when we talked to front office officials who saw him as an amateur. That's always tricky when you're trying to, you don't want to overdo it on a pro debut, but at the same time, you don't want to ignore it. How did you work that Rubik's Cube, you know, to try to figure out what that means for Charlie Condon right now and what that means for him going forward?
I think, you know, it's tough because, you know, it was pretty bad, and almost across the board, the feedback wasn't good. It wasn't good offensively. It wasn't good defensively. There were a lot of knocks on the swing. It didn't get much better in instructs. There were some talk of a hand injury that, you know, was mentioned in our report that, you know, could have potentially impacted some of his play, both defensively and offensively. So when I talk to pro scouts, they really seem to be surprised that this guy was a top of the draft hitter and got the amount of money that he got. Just from a talent perspective and how he showed versus maybe some others. And a lot of these scouts obviously saw a lot of those first rounders because of the bridge leagues out in Arizona. They did get a decent look at a lot of these guys. And, you know, we weren't getting the same sort of negative feedback on a lot of their play, on a lot of the other players that, you know, were first rounders, certainly not within this range. I would argue that this is some of the worst post draft pro feedback I've gotten on a top 10 pick.
And that is important. I value that a lot. I cannot help but think of the thing I remember is, speaking of John Gray, but like flipping back to kind of that era. And I remember the year that Mark Appel went 1-1, and then he went out to pro ball, and I had the Midwest League coverage and all, and I was talking to people and I was asking scouts about him, and it was almost basically unanimous. It was not like, oh, this guy's terrible, I can't even imagine why he's a prospect or anything like that. It was, wait, this guy went 1-1. If I kind of like him, but that's a Jeremy Guthrie comp type guy. Like, it was like one of those things where it's like, he might be a back of the rotation starter type. And that was within like a minute of him taking taking the mound in pro ball. And it never really, you know, it never was proven wrong, I guess is the way I would put it. Now, there's a lot of inertia to it. Like, I was always the low man on Pell, and I had nothing against Mark Appel. Seems like a great dude, but like, it was something where like every year after that, I was like, we need to move him down further. And we always kept moving him down. But if you go that high in the draft, you're going to have some pretty serious runway to prove right or wrong.
Exactly.
I'm not putting Charlie Condon in that boat yet, but I guess what I'm trying to say is when you hear that on that, when you heard that on, Connor Scott, who was not nearly as high a pick, but that was one that I remember like pretty quickly hearing people. Colin Moran was another one where like pretty quickly you heard guys who were like, I'm not saying he's not a prospect, but he's not a top of the draft prospect. We're not there yet with Charlie Condon. We're hoping, we root for prospects. Hopefully that this is a case where Condon just had a rough debut, has an offseason to rest, recover, regroup, and then we're going to see the Charlie Condon we saw in college going forward. But it is something that you have to at least, you have to be watching going into it. The best way I put it is if you're comparing him to say Bazzano or JJ Weatherholt, Travis Bazzano, JJ Weatherholt coming into their first full pro year, we weren't hearing the same things about Bazzano or Weatherholt is the way I would put it.
Not at all. No.
So, okay. With that, the other question with Charlie Condon, where do you think he ends up defensively long-term?
That depends. I mean, like, I was always a little skeptical of him as a third baseman. I tend to value that position defensively, I think, a little bit more than like the common perspective is on that. I think that good third baseman can make shortstops better and can really make an infield really function. So I never really saw him as a third baseman. I thought that a corner outfield spot or first base was more likely. But with, you know, the advanced hit tool and on base ability and what seemed to be 70 power, which I don't still doubt, the EVs are still good. He hits the ball hard. That's not a question. He feels more like a first base left fielder to me. I said left fieldman. First baseman left fielder to me. That's ultimately where I think it fits. And, you know, hopefully his bat comes along enough that, or at least shows what he showed at Georgia out the gate next year. It's kind of a question. When he initially was assigned to high A, I was like, oh, great, I'm probably going to get him in double A Hartford to start 2025. And now I kind of have my doubts about that. I have a feeling he may end up going back to Spokane for a couple of months.
Okay. So before we wrap this up, let's look a little bigger picture in this farm system. We dove deep on who the top prospects, but overall state of the system, what do you look at? I think you've told me you're very bullish on the system. You think it's pretty good. What are the strengths of this system? What is it that really jumps out that you like about what they're doing at the minor league level?
I think it's a couple things. Number one, they've done a great job of targeting athletes just overall. I think you kind of look down this list and even look at some of the guys in the major leagues, guys like Brenton Doyle, outstanding athlete, Jordan Beck, outstanding athlete, Nolan Jones, a really, really good athlete. Cole Carrig at number three, another one who's a really, really good athlete. Brody Brecht for a pitcher is a really good athlete. And I think
played wide receiver.
Yeah. There's some really exciting elements to him in terms of, you know, we'll see what the Rockies do, but I do think he's a guy that could maybe improve in pro ball, you know, even with instruction that maybe doesn't get this instruction that the Rockies coaching and in development does obviously take some hits and nicks and bruises in the public space. But I do think that there's a chance he still gets better. You know, Ryan Ritter is a guy who's a really good athlete, a really good defensive shortstop. And then the other part of it is how they've targeted some big stuff arms, not only in the draft, Dolander being one. Palmquist isn't a typical stuff arm, but it's really unique traits and characteristics. He's another lower VAA guy, similar to Dolander, though he does it in a very different way and doesn't nearly throw as hard. You worry a little bit more about the breaking ball stuff with Palmquist, but it's interesting. Brecht, as I had mentioned, you know, one of the hardest throwers in the draft, and I think certainly has stuff. They kind of have this group of pitchers that are coming back now, and Jordy Vargas, who was a prospect prior to getting injured, that within this system was getting a lot of positive up arrow feedback in like our mid-season ranks prior to the injury in 23. You know, Hughes, they acquired Eugenier Herrera. I hope they said that correctly, from the Brewers, which I thought was a good grab. It was actually an astute move by them. And then there's, you know, guys like Sandy Ozuna, Seth Halverson, who's probably, you know, going to be back in the big league rotation, could be their closer for the next several years. There's a lot of pitching in this system, and it's kind of surprising. You wouldn't necessarily anticipate that, but I think, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitchers, you know, from 24 to 30 finish off the list. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 others. So, I mean, more than half of this Rockies list is pitching. And you never would have anticipated that. But when you talk to scouts that were down in the DSL, scouts that were at the complexes or saw their instructs, so many of them were really impressed with the amount of talent in their pitching course.
Flipping it around, what is the weakness of this farm system right now?
I think it's just having that, they want to have that with Condon, but just having that franchise number three, number four hitter kind of bat, because the big league team needs that. You know, that's the thing that Condon can provide for them is, you know, being a guy who could hit 275 with 30 plus home runs and drive in runs with all these guys around him that I think are pretty decent hitters, and they have some decent position players, but they don't have that guy. When they were making playoff runs, they had that guy in Arenado.
Arenado, you could go back to Todd Helton. You could go back like Larry Walker. You could go back.
Yeah, they had a lot of bats.
When the Rockies are really good, they have, you know, Tulo. I mean, they have this guy who you're like, that's the guy. And you can say, yeah, he's benefiting from Coors Field and all that. It doesn't matter. You're talking about that guy who's hitting for average, getting on base, and hitting for power. He's checking all the boxes.
Exactly. And I think that's what they need.
And that's where, again, if it's not Condon, it doesn't feel like that there's some other very nice hitting prospect. There's nice hitters at the big league level for them. Like we've mentioned a Tovar and guys like that, but there's not another guy, you know, there's not someone else on this list. There's not someone else you look at and say, oh, that's the guy who's going to be that 280, 370, 500 type guy.
Yeah, it just isn't.
So, okay, to wrap this up then, also, what is you mentioned there's a lot of interesting talent in the complex and all, and I don't want you to go through all of it, but I do want you to give the listeners, the viewers, someone who really does jump out to you as someone who's a little further away right now, but it's exciting and is a name to remember for the future.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the names I'd probably throw out there first is Sandy Ozuna. You know, when you look at Ozuna's season, you know, the numbers, I'm just going to double check it. The numbers weren't great. But when you talk to anybody who's seen him, well, I guess 414 wasn't too bad. Yeah, the numbers were fine. But, you know, it still is complex. He didn't dominate. But when you look at the quality of stuff and how projectable he still is, you know, sitting, you know, as a whatever 19-year-old sitting 94 to 95, touching 97, you know, it's a pretty interesting slider as well. You know, he doesn't have a great feel for spin yet. It's something that, you know, he could potentially add in the coming years, but felt very much like when I was speaking with scouts and those that, you know, had a good feel for the Rocky system, like he was probably the highest upside arm of all these guys that are kind of in this mix, at least in terms of lower level, complex level pitchers.
So with this, you know, like, okay, the one last thing I'll also say with that, I keep saying last thing, but I want to, you know, there's so much good stuff here. They're really pitching heavy at the lower levels. Does this, like, the thing that worries me about that a little bit, we're talking about that the Rockies haven't had a wave, right? They haven't had everything crest at the right time. They do have some upper level pitchers, but the thing I say about that though, is I kind of feel like that you want your upper level pitchers to arrive a year or two before your position players. I kind of feel like that maybe this is a little bit backwards on this, where again, you have to just do it. You have to play the ball as it lies, but I feel like that they've got a couple position players already in the big leagues. They've got some, you know, the Dollingers and all who are not that far away, but I do feel like that you might see the makings of a lineup and then hoping that the pitching can catch up to it. Is that reasonable?
Yeah. I think what they have to hope for is that some of these international guys that they've signed and have shown pretty well continue to develop and then, you know, are stars in high A, and then they can, you know, potentially package them for more pitching. I think it's going to be one of those. If you know, the lineup is there and they feel like they're competitive in 2027 and these guys are still a year or two away. And as you said, you kind of need that year of adjustment in the major leagues for pitchers before they can really be quality rotation pieces. And even sometimes it takes longer. It almost seems like they'd be better off moving these guys out for, you know, an older pitcher that, you know, has some experience that, you know, maybe has a repertoire they feel can be good in Coors, you know, a sinker or something like that, that, you know, they feel can maybe negate some of the batted ball effects and, you know, the huge outfield out there.
It's going to be interesting. It is going to be, I would say, in many ways fun to watch, but, you know, I do hope for Rockies fans, it's a little bit more fun to watch than it's been in recent years. We thank you for another download of the Baseball America Deep Dive podcast here. If you're watching this on YouTube, we also appreciate watching there. Please subscribe. Please click the bell so you get the notifications when we have new posts. We are keeping these organization deep dives rolling day after day after day. We're going to try to get through all 30 before spring training really gets going, giving us a little bit of wiggle room there before spring training really gets going, really before spring training games are being played, definitely before spring breakouts are being played and all that. But also, if you enjoy this, if you like this, you also would love this, which is the Baseball America Prospect Handbook. You can buy it now. If you buy it now from us, I will be sending you an email that basically sends you a digital version of it very quickly, within usually a business day of when you purchase it. And I do mean, I will send you. I get a list every day. I email them out. We're small. We try to be big, but we're small. But check that out. Check out baseballamerica.com. And you can get all this information. We've got top 100. We've got top 30s. We got international. We've got college preview. We got everything going up at the site right now. It's a great time to subscribe. baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.